You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
Mountain Equipment Co-op, popularly known as MEC, is a consumer's co-op. Started in 1971 with a few members in Vancouver, this is MEC's 40th anniversary. And today MEC has some 3 million members and 14 stores across Canada. Currently, MEC is in the midst of an election for 3 members to its board of directors. There are 10 candidates who are running for the 3 positions, and voting continues until March 31st. One of the candidates is Drew Oja Jay. He's an activist and journalist. He's founder of the Dominion magazine and of Media Co-op. And he joins me by phone from Halifax in Nova Scotia to explain why he's running for the board. Good afternoon in the Maritimes, Drew, and welcome to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Co-ops come in all shapes and sizes. What kind of co-ops have you had experience with?
I've had experience with, starting a co-op from scratch has been certainly my main experience. But I've been a member of MEC for a long time, and I was exposed to a lot of different kinds of sort of worker co-ops. One that my parents were part of, and consumer co-ops growing up as well. And I'm on the board of sort of 2 other cooperatively run organizations. One is an IT outfit in Montreal called Kumbit that does everything in a strictly sort of horizontal democratic fashion, and another newspaper called Ensemble pour demain, which is based out of Quebec.
Now, MEC is, as I mentioned, now currently quite a huge co-op. What strengths do you see MEC as having already?
Well, I think that the MEC is just a really great example of how you can have, a huge organization that's really logistically sophisticated. And serves the needs of a lot of people, and does, it creates really high quality products. But at the same time, it has, it's not driven by profit. It's owned by its members, and any democratic decision that those members make, at least in theory, dictates what the co-op will do. And so you have a $200 million a year enterprise, that is completely there to act at the behest of its members, and it's a really radical model in a lot of ways. You have, you have 3 million members, and each member has 1 vote, and everyone has an equal vote, no matter how much they've bought at the co-op, no matter how much they're involved, they get an equal say. And I think that really sets a really interesting example for how we could manage our economy differently. So starting there. Another thing that MEC has going for it is that it has a mandate from its membership that it's actually decided to carry out to give 1% of its overall revenues to environmental groups. And so you have, over $2 million a year coming out of MEC, a democratically run organization, and being given to environmental groups. And so that in of itself is sort of an amazing accomplishment. And I think it leaves a lot of room to build a lot of positive things on.
Well, you have some proposals to build positively on that. First of all, you have some ideas about how to make MEC a contributor to the building of the co-op movement as a whole. What sort of suggestions have you developed in that area?
I'm sort of starting from the point of MEC's mandate that it already has, and one of the things that MEC has at a constitutional level is a commitment to the cooperative principles. And some of those cooperative principles, I definitely recommend that everyone familiarize themselves with them. It's easy enough to Google. But one of those cooperative principles is intercooperation, so the idea of supporting other cooperatives and supporting the cooperative movement. Through participation in the co-op movement, which MEC does to a certain extent, but I think it can also extend to supporting other co-ops and really sort of giving goods produced by co-ops and other co-ops that might exist around MEC stores, you know, a sort of pride of place. So I would see things like featuring products made by worker co-ops, maybe even with like a little bit of information about how they're made and how those co-ops function and what benefits they provide to their members, you know, in store displays or something like that. And another suggestion I have is to provide a sort of free advertising for local or free or at cost advertising for other local co-ops that are in the area or around a MEC store. So whether it's, you know, a worker run cafe or whether it's you know, some kind of information technology consultancy, or whether it's you know, some kind of tour guide service that's cooperatively run, that that local co-ops would get a chance to promote their services to Mountain Equipment Co-ops members.
You mentioned earlier that MEC contributes 1% of to environmental groups, and you feel that there's some alliances that have been formed that should be reconsidered. Could you give us your thoughts on that?
Definitely. So, first of all, MEC has been in a partnership with the Canadian Parks and Wilderness Society, and otherwise known as CPAWS. And this partnership is called the Big Wild, and the idea behind the Big Wild is, I think, fundamentally sound. The idea is to preserve as much of Canada's sort of undeveloped wilderness as possible. I think that in and of itself is a great idea. But the sort of framework in which it's being done, I think, it leaves a lot to be desired. The first thing is that CPAWS and also MEC have signed on to something called the Boreal Conservation Framework, which is also signed by Suncor, which is the largest tar sands operator and the fifth largest oil company in North America, also incidentally operating out of Libya. And then you have Nexen, which is another tar sands operator that's also signed onto this. And then you have ALPAC, or Alberta Pacific, which is another major forestry company. And you have Tembec, another major forestry company, signed onto this. And CPAWS has also signed a deal with the FPAC, which is the Forestry Products Association of Canada. Basically, that agreement says that they will not criticize, and they will actually support all the products of all FPAC members as sustainably harvested, you know, in exchange for certain changes, not in the amount of cutting that's happening, but in where that cutting's happening. So really, they're getting very little in terms of actual conservation, but what they are getting is, I think the logging companies are getting a great deal in return. So all that's to say that you have, on the one hand, you have a mandate for conservation. On the other hand, you have a partnership with the companies that are destroying and doing the opposite of conservation. They're logging the wilderness. They're strip mining, you know, just tearing up huge amounts of land, including removing entire rivers, you know, in the tar sands, and they're also polluting the water, you know, just with huge amounts of toxins that are being sort of spewed into the air and water, all you know, in especially in the tar sands areas around Fort McMurray. And that water is flowing north, you know, ironically into some of the areas that that they're, you know, very proud about having achieved protection for. And so I think that as a strategy needs to be examined. I think I don't think there's really been a lot of scrutiny on it. I think we need to, like, I'm not saying that I want to, you know, that I would be able to even impose my will. Or that I would want to. I'm simply saying that what I would like to do if I'm elected to the board is to have a discussion to say, is this effective? And let's actually talk about this from the first premise. If our goal is conservation, what are we doing in partnership with these corporations?
Second policy area that concerns you is MEC's ethical purchasing practices. What are your concerns?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, it's really amazing that MEC has an ethical purchasing policy. In that sense, I think they are light years ahead of other, of really any other company of similar size in Canada. And so, I mean, I think it's really important to recognize how far ahead of the curve MEC is on that. They're a leader, and that's undisputed. But on the other hand, I think that when you talk about something that's ethical purchasing, you have to be really, I think you have to, you, that has to mean something. There has to be real meaning attached to that. And so what I'm proposing as sort of the next step to firm up MEC's ethical purchasing standards is to say that companies that benefit from war and occupation should not be considered ethical suppliers. And currently they are. For example, and I choose this example because it's been highlighted, I think, by rightly so, by a lot of social movements across Canada, by grassroots social justice groups, you know, from Vancouver to Halifax, and everywhere in between, is there's an Israeli company called Source Vagabond, which actually supplies the Israeli military and supplies the U.S. Marines, and benefits directly in a financial way from the ongoing occupation of Palestine, the ongoing occupation of Iraq. And I think that if we're going to call something a company an ethical supplier, it doesn't matter how they treat their workers. I mean, I think that if they, you know, they could be very, like, doing all kinds of great stuff in their community. But if they're benefiting from a war and occupation, I don't think they should be considered an ethical supplier. I think that should be a choice that companies make. Either they're going to take money from military occupations or not. But you know, and that should, you know, in terms of co-ops like MEC buying ethical products and committing to buying ethical products, that should be a part of the standard. And so that's my basic proposal. My other proposal, with regard to the sort of boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, is simply to say that I don't think that there's been, and I don't think that there's even the possibility right now of having an informed debate among the MEC membership about the proposal to boycott Israel. So I think that in general we need it's absolutely essential for the membership to have the ability to talk to each other and to debate issues, you know, BDS among others, and to actually be able to come to informed decisions about those. And I don't think that's in place right now.
Your campaign's endorsed by Naomi Klein and other justice organizations. Just briefly, how's your campaign going?
It's hard to say. I would say in relation to the overall, you know, we need about 10,000 votes to win a seat. But certainly all signs, you know, from where I stand, are looking pretty good. There's been a huge amount of support from activists across the country, and I'd say concerned individuals in general, and members. Over 100 people have helped spread the word about the campaign. If you go to my website, there's a whole list of you know, I think it's up to like 106 people who have spread the word to their friends and colleagues through email or Facebook or Twitter. And so that's really encouraging, and I've generally been receiving a huge amount of encouragement from all kinds of different people, including a lot of people I wouldn't have expected to hear from at all. I would say it's going quite well. But that said, it's really going to depend on how many people actually go and vote, and that's impossible to say until the actual results come in. So we'll see.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us this morning, Drew, and good fortune in getting elected.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Drew Ojeje. He's an activist and journalist, founder of the Dominion magazine and of Media Co-op. And if you'd like more information on his campaign policies, you can go to his website. It's mac.drew.ca.